I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR News. It's now 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In the national debate over how to improve public education, the teaching profession has come under increasing scrutiny, especially how we evaluate their effectiveness in the classroom. States vary in their approaches, with some linking student test scores with pretty serious consequences for teachers, including pay raises, promotions, and job security. In New Hampshire, it's been somewhat less severe. The Department of Education has developed a new model for evaluating teachers that includes support and professional development, as well as scrutiny of student test scores. Still, these are recommended changes rather than requirements, leaving plenty of room for local control. Today in The Exchange, in the first of a two-part series on the teaching profession, this hour, how we evaluate our teachers in New Hampshire. Let's hear from you. What's the best way to assess teacher quality? What role should test scores play? Or the input of parents, administrators, and students? Are the tools we have for teacher evaluations tough enough or too tough? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. That's all one word. With us in studio is Ashley Frame, a classroom teacher for 9 years. She now works for the New Hampshire Department of Education in professional development and educator effectiveness. And Ashley, it's nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
It's nice to meet you. The pleasure is mine.
Also with us, Ben Dick, English teacher at Memorial High School and president of the Manchester Education Association. He's been in the classroom for 12 years. And Ben, it's good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us, Stephen Dano, fourth grade teacher at the Lyme School. He's been an elementary school teacher for nearly 30 years. Wow, Stephen, that's a long track record. Good to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And also with us from the D.C. area, Leanna Heighton, assistant editor for Education Week, co-author of the blog Curriculum Matters. And Leanna, thank you also for carving out some time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Leanna, let's start with you with the national picture. When do you see this discussion about teacher evaluations, measuring effectiveness, really heating up, Leanna? And what do you think got it started?
Yeah, so just to give you a little history, you know, we've been talking about school improvement for a long time. 1983, we had a nation at risk. In 2001, No Child Left Behind, and we started talking about accountability and looking at subgroups of students. But in 2009, a couple things happened that really, really brought teacher evaluation and teacher quality to the forefront. So a teacher training group put out a report called the Widget Effect. And the report found that 99% of teachers are actually rated as satisfactory. So 99 out of 100 teachers are told, you're a good teacher. So it, you know, brought up this issue that we really aren't able to tell who the effective from the ineffective teachers are. That same year, the Race to the Top competition, the federal competition for grant funding for states, said if states incorporate student achievement, so student test scores, into their teacher evaluation measures, then they would get extra points. So a lot of states started to do this, and actually a lot of states started passing laws saying, sure, we're going to tie in student achievement to teacher evaluation. So since 2009, we've seen, you know, in 2009, I think 4 states initially had student achievement as part of their teacher evaluations. Since then, we're up to about 35 states that are saying has to be a significant part of teacher evaluations is student test scores.
So this really started, this tying student test scores to teacher evaluation, started under President Obama.
Yeah, it really did. And with the Race to the Top competition,
How much of this do you think, Leanna, is based on this sort of generalized anxiety about how American students perform on standardized tests versus other countries like, you know, Finland, South Korea, France, take your pick?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that's always sort of in the background here. I write a little bit about sort of these international tests and the national, you know, the nation's report card a little bit, and this idea that we are behind other nations. Sort of there's this economic argument, you know, we need to improve schools and teaching and student achievement to be, you know, to boost ourselves economically and in sort of our ranking among the other countries. I always take that sort of with a grain of salt, but it is part of this, I would say.
Well, and Stephen, I want to turn to you next because, again, as I said, you've been teaching for 30 years in the elementary schools. What's your thought on this idea of we don't have a good way to give teachers a report card? I mean, here you guys are giving out report cards all the time, ABCDs for students, but we don't have a good way of evaluating teachers. What do you think about this?
I think that the classroom experience depends on multiple lenses to sort of evaluate what's going in the classroom. I think traditionally the approach where an administrator comes in, views you for a short period of time, leaves the classroom, and then sort of writes up the report is something that should be and is currently being sort of looked at pretty seriously. So,
and that's how they used to do it, right? The
correct.
Principal would come in, the teacher would say, students, principal so-and-so will be coming in today, and he or she would sit at the back of the room and then write a report, and that was the assessment.
Correct. So I think the initiative to look at various ways to sort of evaluate what's going on in the classroom is very valid and important. And there's lots of ways to sort of, as we're trying to discover, go about that sort of process.
So don't just tie it to student test scores. Look at this wider lens, as you said, Stephen.
Correct. You need multiple sort of lenses or data points to sort of evaluate accurately what's going on.
Yeah. So how do you feel about this whole focus, though, on, you know, we need to evaluate teachers in a tougher way, that, you know, to weed out the bad from the good? How do you feel about all this conversation that's been going on for the last couple of years?
I think anytime you have that conversation to sort of promote what you're doing and to effectively do it better is a very constructive one. It's how the conversation is being framed and how you move forward is the key.
Yeah. What do you think about this, Ben?
I couldn't agree more. I think that what we've been dealing with is a snapshot. And you can't clearly evaluate anybody doing anything in a snapshot. It makes it very difficult. So for us to try and find a more all-encompassing way to say somebody is doing their job well or need some help, I think that that's an important conversation to have. And that's what we're trying to do, I believe, with this new system, that the districts are able to use as they see fit, which is a different way that New Hampshire's kind of doing it. It's a suggestion. It's not the end-all, be-all. And so for each district to have the opportunity to say, we're going to use this aspect and maybe tweak it or do it differently, but with the idea that we get that all-encompassing picture, those many lenses, as was said, I think it's an important conversation to have.
So when you say snapshot, you mean that one-time student test score. Your kids did badly this year, Ben, so you're a bad teacher.
No, I'm sorry. What I was saying was our previous way of evaluating was the snapshot. The principal comes in for a day or for a class and says, here you go. You must be doing a great job because you told your students I was going to show up this morning, and I did show up this morning, and boy, they were great. And we had a nice talk about it, you know, before the show and some of the things that students will do on that day that maybe they wouldn't do on any other day because they always feel as if they're being evaluated too, or it shows how they feel about. My principal has always said, I know if they like you because when I come in, they're going to be great. And thankfully, so far, he's right. But the snapshot also could apply to the test scores. You know, I think that the big fear that people have had with this new system, and myself included, as we slowly integrate it in Manchester, is the idea that teacher A teaches student A, who gets a test score A, and lo and behold, somebody's a good teacher or a bad teacher. And that's not fair. It's not the way this conversation should be going. And I'm not saying it's going that way, but I feel that people assume it's going that way.
Not fair?
Well, I work in Manchester, and it's an urban district. It's the most urban district certainly in this state. We have a lot of factors that play a part as to whether or not a student is going to achieve on this one test at this one point in this one year. And the sole deciding factor as to how that student performs is not the teacher in the classroom. It's impossible. The things we see each and every day vary so drastically from student to student, from day to day, from school to school, 22 buildings, that it would be impossible to say, you know, Johnny or Susie did well or did poorly on this test simply because Ben Dick stood in front of that classroom and saw them every day. They have a homelessness rate, a poverty rate, a free and reduced lunch rate that dwarfs so many of the other things they think about every day, those students, that they're doing their best and they want to succeed, but outside factors play a big part.
And they come to school hungry,
absolutely.
Or mom and dad weren't home last night, or
right.
Whatever.
We were talking recently about how many snow days we've had. It's been a tough winter. And one of the factors that we think about in Manchester, and somebody brought my attention to it, and I can't believe I never really thought about it, every time we cancel school, about 40% of our students miss two meals that day because they don't get their free breakfast
wow.
and they don't get their free lunch.
Wow.
And so it's really difficult to think on a Tuesday, I'm going to be really good tomorrow when I go back to school on Wednesday. I only had one meal today, hopefully, but I'm going to give it my all. And you certainly, we as teachers and all the people sitting in this room have been in the classroom, we do everything we can to be as many parts of that student's life as possible, but there are a lot of factors.
Ashley, I want to bring you into this too. And, you know, Leanna mentioned how this whole focus really heated up a couple years ago under President Obama after Nation at Risk in the 80s and President Bush, No Child Left Behind. What about in New Hampshire? How actively engaged has New Hampshire been in this conversation about finding better ways to measure teacher effectiveness?
Oh, I'd say very active in this national debate. You know, New Hampshire has been a member of the Chief State of School Officers, which is a national organization kind of monitoring any hot topics around education, and we have really worked closely with some assessment organizations to think critically and with a large stakeholder group about what kinds of student data are useful, what kinds of student data would help a teacher, how many methods should you use when you are a teacher in your classroom to get a good sense of how they are doing and your impact on them. So I think New Hampshire has actually taken quite an active role and has really, I think in a lot of ways, been quite a leader in the nation in terms of looking at multiple measures.
Yeah, and that's what I want to get to with you. Just real quickly, tick off a couple multiple measures, because the concern you hear is it's one snapshot or another snapshot.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I think one of the areas I'm most comfortable with, and I actually was evaluated using this method, is the student learning objectives. And there's a lot of conversation out and around about student learning objectives, but really in a nutshell, student learning objectives are an aggressive goal for your students that you have, the professional development that you as an educator need to help them accomplish that goal, the assessments you're going to use, and then the reflection about that process. So it's a whole system.
A lot harder than filling in a bubble on a
test,
but maybe more meaningful. We will talk more in just a moment about evaluating teachers, and let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. Sign up your team for NHPR's second annual Trivia Smackdown. Flex your memory for minutia, and maybe you could be this year's champ. Spaces fill up quickly, so visit nhpr.org now to enter your team. This event made possible in part by NEEPCO. More of The Exchange coming up on NHPR, and a 10 on the Diane Rehm Show debate over potential use and abuse of the powerful new opioid, Zohydro. New Hampshire weather, mostly cloudy today, with scattered snow showers. Some snow may be heavy at times this afternoon. Total accumulations around an inch. Highs today, low to mid-20s. And for tonight, partly cloudy, some scattered snow showers this evening, then mostly clear after midnight, lows around zero. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Seacoast Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, orthopedics and team physicians for the UNH Wildcats, providing evaluations and surgical interventions for athletic injuries. SOSmed.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at how we evaluate our teachers here in New Hampshire, the first of a two-part series on the teaching profession. Let's hear from you. What do you think the best way is to assess teacher quality? What role should test scores play, or the input of parents, principals, students? Are there other tools we should be using? And are those tools good enough or not? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. And before we go to our listeners, Leanna Heighton, I did want to bring you back in. You heard the conversation about what we're talking about here in New Hampshire, not just a snapshot of the principal sitting down and saying good job, bad job, not just a snapshot of, you know, student did well on this test, student did not do well, but I hear our educators here in the Granite State anyway calling for a broad way to look at teacher effectiveness, and I wonder what you're hearing from educators in other states, Leanna.
Yeah, it's interesting. This This is an incredibly inflammatory topic in some other states right now. The idea that, you know, tying student test scores to teacher evaluations, especially, you know, there have been places where they're called value-added scores. It's looking at student growth over a year. How much did a student grow in 1 year? And those are being, in a lot of places in 35 states now, tied to teacher evaluations, which is, you know, not necessarily the case in New Hampshire. It's recommended there. But this has become really inflammatory because in some cases in New York and in L.A. and most recently in Florida, they've actually started releasing these test scores. So it will say, you know, give a teacher, it reduces a teacher to a number based on how their students did on a test. So, you know, a lot of teachers have been up in arms about this, and it is it's a scary thing for teachers to think about. So,
but 35 states are doing it, despite the inflammatory nature of it, Liana?
Yes, 35 states now have laws saying you have to tie student test scores to teacher evaluations. Only a few states are actually releasing these student test score numbers. That hasn't happened in a lot of places. But, it looks different in different states. Some states are just doing you know, it's going to be a small part of a teacher evaluation, those test scores. It might be 20% is sort of on the low end. Some states and in the District of Columbia, it's as high as 50% of a teacher's evaluation score is how well their students did on tests. So depending on how the state is doing it, yeah, teachers have been up in arms about this. But in a lot of places, these laws have passed. States wrote this into their applications to get some grant money from the feds in 2009, and now it has to happen. Now it's happening.
That's that federal push that you talked about earlier, Liana. And Stephen Dano, to you, so tying student test scores to teacher evaluations, to their own grade, so to speak, does 20% sound okay? 50% sound like too much? What are your thoughts there?
I think when you start adding percentages and numbers, people often fixate on sort of what that benchmark should be. And I don't know if there's an ultimate answer in terms of when you sort of – what is that sort of breaking point? So I think how you interpret those test scores and how they're used is really what the measure should be. Raw numbers can be very deceiving and could be used in a lot of different ways. So I think you need to really sort of tease out what those numbers are representing and then how you're going to use those numbers to interpret students' performances.
Yeah, and Ashley Liana says that 35 states tie it, although the tie is stronger in other states than in others, but New Hampshire just recommends it. How come?
Well, I think that New Hampshire is really unique, I think. I always like to say that anyway, but there is so much authority in the local school boards, and local governance is such a value here in the state. And so the recommendations that the state has come out with in the Phase 2 task report are really best practices and suggestions for how to be a holistic and sensitive measurement system for a teacher. And I think it's really important. I couldn't agree with Stephen more that I think the way that you, when you get fixated on that 20%, it sounds harsher than I think it actually looks in practice. I think that student learning objectives and student growth percentiles really lend themselves to a rubric scoring method. And so that becomes a part, just like the rest of your evaluation, the observation components, the professional responsibility components, that's looked at critically and with a rubric so that it's clear and transparent. That's what I would advocate for, and I think that's what the Phase 2 task report makes fairly clear.
Is there a danger in trying to be sensitive to this concern of teachers? You know, they don't want to be judged on one raw number. Who knows how a child was feeling that day? But do you get, to use your words, Ashley, holistic and sensitive, does that get too squishy and then you're not really doing anything?
I mean, I think
sales representatives are judged by their sales numbers. You know, public radio people are judged by audience numbers. So it's a data-driven world.
Absolutely. And as a teacher who has actually used this method and been evaluated against it, looking at the numbers, I think really improved my practice. And I think that's really what this is about. I think all teachers want to be better at their craft. And I think that when you start to take a deeper look into those numbers, a deeper dive into that data, I think that you start to say, wow, such and such kid needs this. Such and such kid, I think, needs this. And when you look at the multiple data points and you say, on the kneecap, they're doing this. On my classroom assessments, they're doing this. On team assessments, they're doing this way. And you see where they start to vary. now you can really make some good instructional shifts.
Yeah, and you really, though, have to drill down, it sounds like, to each kid.
Oh, yeah.
And what's
absolutely
happening. And Ben, I wonder, do you have time to do that?
It's funny you say that. That's been one of the big concerns with the new system, with the new evaluation system, is it's big. That's the easiest way to say it. It's big. And that doesn't mean it's bad, but considering how many initiatives, how many programs, how many things teachers in general have to worry about each and every day, something of this scope, and at the same time, something for the administrators to have to deal with is this new system that is a lot larger.
This new system.
This new evaluation system that's a lot larger than anything they've done in the past. And so I think that that's obviously a concern. I want to also make the point, though, I agree that this value growth, as I think it was referred to, the idea of following the learner is kind of how we say it here, is to me the ideal way to go. Because as I sit here and think, and we have a fourth grade teacher, I teach ninth grade, 11th and 12th grade. If a student has shown in the fourth grade that he or she, you know, reached a certain level that maybe wasn't the expectation, it wouldn't be right for me to hold the exact same expectation of all 11th graders if some of them were, you know, it's hard, you know, in radio to give, you know, for me to use my hands, not very visual. But, you know, if they didn't reach certain plateaus in fourth grade, it stands to reason that they're not just going to jump to the right plateau in fifth or sixth or seventh. And as we spread these students out, and I have 130 of them who've come from five different elementary schools, two different middle schools, whatever it may be, that really it's the follow the learner that I think we would be interested in. What I really appreciate in my knowledge of the New Hampshire DOE's recommendation is it allows the districts to choose that if they would like. It allows for the SLOs, the student learning objectives that were mentioned earlier.
Because there's big differences between your district and Stevens district.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for us both to look at the NECAP, which is the test that we currently use in New Hampshire, and say that even Bedford, which is a very affluent community next door to Manchester, and to say that a student scores X on the NECAP in Bedford, the student should score X on the NECAP in Manchester, they're different worlds. And I think that that's what's being lost, and that's the fear. And one thing that I don't think maybe we do enough of a job promoting with the New Hampshire method so far is that it allows you to make that decision per the district's choice.
So it sounds like you are pleased that New Hampshire, in its new teacher evaluation system that's still coming online, as far as I understand, mm-hmm. that it's a little more nuanced than what we're seeing perhaps in some other states.
Absolutely.
And that's a good thing, in your opinion.
I couldn't agree more, yes.
All right. Let's take some calls from our listeners. Emails are welcome, exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Megan's waiting in Portsmouth. Hi, Megan. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
No problem. Good morning. Perspective on this. I'm a college professor, and so not only do I also appreciate the idea of being evaluated on teaching, but without having to answer to standardized tests, which quite frankly is a relief. It gives you a little more autonomy as an instructor and feels, in my view, a little bit more respected. But in addition to that, what I've been able to see right now is we're getting in college at the undergrad level now kind of the first generation of students that was really involved in this heavy level of testing and evaluation, the first kind of No Child Left Behind generation. And if I may be blunt, there's been a giant shift in the way that these students approach learning. And it's not what I would consider to be a good shift. You have students that are absolutely fixated on what's on the test, how am I evaluated, and that is the bare minimum that I absolutely want to know. And now, I'm not so naive as to think that that never existed. Of course it did. But now it's the prevalent way of looking at things. And so ultimately, even though we're now speaking about teacher evaluation, the way that this type of influence has had over students is just, it's not producing the results that I feel it was intended to produce.
Wow, Megan, that's fascinating. The NCLB generation, the No Child Left Behind generation, and But I'd love to hear from a couple of you on this. Leanna Hyten, when No Child Left Behind first came out, there was a lot of criticism here in New Hampshire that it would lead to a fill-in-the-bubble mentality. Now we have Megan, a college professor, saying, yeah, that's what she's seeing. I wonder what you're hearing about this, Leanna.
It's interesting. One thing we haven't talked much about yet is the Common Core state standards. These are happening in 46 states in the District of Columbia. They are now going to be using new standards, which have been developed. And these standards are more complex. They're more rigorous. They are, require different things of students. And the testing that goes along with these standards is coming next year. There'll be some field testing this year, but that's coming next year. And those tests are going to look different. The idea is to get away from the fill-in-the-bubble and to get kids doing more of this deep thinking, deep, rigorous, complex, analysis. So we will see if this changes. You know, if that's what you're seeing now, I think the goal from a lot of people who've been involved in the Common Core state standards is to get away from this fill-in-the-bubble mentality, the right-wrong mentality, into let's get students thinking more deeply. And the tests are supposed to reflect that, but they're coming. We haven't seen them, and we'll see if that really happens.
Wow. What do you think, Stephen, again, given your long experience in the classroom, this No Child Left Behind generation?
I think it's a very interesting perspective that someone who is seeing that, and I think we have shifted, I think, due to No Child Left Behind, to result-driven sort of results when learning is a process. And trying to evaluate that process is the key. But when you're just sort of focusing on results, we tend to get students really fixated on the end goal and not so much how to get there, which is what critical thinking and the classroom experience should be all about.
And I remember this whole conversation about No Child Left Behind. We did probably dozens of shows on it over the years. One positive thing we did hear, Stephen, from parents was, hey, you know, I appreciate finally having some sense of how well my local schools are doing. You know, I'm a parent, I'm a taxpayer. You know, I'm glad to know that my local school is doing so-so here and well here. So some parents appreciated that assessment. I want to hear from you, Stephen, and Ben, I can see you're wanting to jump in too.
I think communication is critical, whether it's test scores, whether it's sort of daily performance in the classroom. So I think it's very neat and tidy to put a number and send it out to parents and communicate that. I think effective schools communicate with their parents in a much more consistent fashion, and that's something we're always striving to do. And it's not just the number mailed to parents, which is important, but there are a lot more other factors as well.
I can see you've got some thoughts here, Ben.
Well, my concern is that when we talk about this test score, the No Child Left Behind test, here in New Hampshire we use the NECAP, is that with every year of a child's schooling career, when they realize, quite bluntly, that the test has no effect on their academic career whatsoever, they put less and less effort into it. You know, you see, I teach high school. I administer the test. I see the student who finishes in 17 minutes because he decided to make a Christmas tree out of dots on his paper.
Oh, dear. Really?
Absolutely.
Oh,
absolutely.
My goodness.
And we had to take to the concept about 6 or 7 years ago in our district of giving incentives. If the teacher sees that you made what is deemed a valiant effort, I'm going to give you a ticket. And we're going to put these tickets in a big hat, and we're going to draw raffles, and we're going to give you an iPod because you gave an effort. And then if everybody gives an effort, we're going to have pizza. And if you do well enough, if you're proficient or proficient with distinction, the top two levels, you can get out of taking your midterm exam or your final exam.
Okay, that's a big incentive.
But this is what we had to do because, unfortunately, a test that has no teeth whatsoever for the student but is used to judge the teacher in the district because it's printed in the Union Leader or whatever paper you happen to read, and we are judged on it, is to me a massive failure and one of the big reasons why we're trying to dig ourselves out of this mess right now.
Well, Megan, great to hear from you. Thank you so much. And Steven's up next from Loudoun. Hi, Stephen. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Laura. Just a couple of comments. I understand. I'm listening to all this evaluation of teachers and all, but it's my understanding as an outsider that it's very difficult to release underperforming teachers because after a certain period of time, I believe it's 3 years, they become vested and then they have the union, you know, on their behalf. And it's just, I wonder what kind of resources the administration has to either help these underperforming teachers or move them on in a sense that they can then recover the classroom and work, you know, better with these students. The second comment is, real quick, is that I see going to the school meetings every year, the number of people that are retired and the number of people that are new hires, and there's a tremendous age discrepancy between the two. And I'm wondering, you know, is it because of the way we fund our education that we're hiring more of these young people out of college that we can pay, the, or they're willing to accept this step one or this first paycheck, and rather than seasoned teachers that are maybe moving in from other areas that are looking for school jobs, and exactly how that would be affecting our kids' education based on not having the experience in the classroom like a seasoned teacher would. And Laura, I'm going to listen to this off the line.
Steve, thank you so much for calling. And because we're talking about assessments, I think I want to focus on that part of your question, and I hope that's okay. And he raises a great point, Ashley. You know, assessments are great. We've talked about how different states do it. We've talked about New Hampshire is moving toward doing it. But what do you do with it? I mean, if it isn't used to remove a teacher who's not performing well, what good is it?
It is a great question. I think it's very valid and interesting and exciting, I think, to hear about. I will go back to the Phase 2 Task Report, which is actually an educator support and evaluation model. And I think that's really comes out very loud and clear in the language of the document. And I also have to say, you know, being from a school that has drafted their own teacher evaluation model, we actually call it our professional growth model, and it's linked directly to professional development. So when you have clear standards and you know what you're aiming for, and when your administrator's coming and observing you, when you're discussing your portfolio, when you're looking at your student data, you know where you're going. You know what you're trying to accomplish. And so that itself is a growth mindset. It's not sort of an end game. You're just going to have a great evaluation that's done. You're always going to have areas where you can improve.
Sure. No one's perfect. But, but what if someone is consistently missing the mark?
Well, I think that is definitely a question that everyone who's drafting a plan like this really needs to consider. And I think a success from the school district that I was a part of before, a success of our system, we had broad union representation. We had paraprofessionals on the table. We had administrators, teachers. Everyone was on board. And we really decided it needed to be clear. We needed to have really clear systems in place so people knew when they were doing a good job and when they needed to really pick up the pace.
So when you're drafting the system, if you have union buy-in, then maybe it's a little bit easier to get rid of that teacher who's not performing well. Is that what you're saying?
Well, not exactly easier to get rid of them, but I think clearer for everybody to know what to do to
All right.
succeed.
Stephen, thank you very much for the question. A lot more of your comments and thoughts at 1-800-892-6477.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, debate over potential use and abuse of the powerful new opioid, Zohydro. Then the challenges of managing elderly parents' finances. All coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather mostly cloudy today with scattered snow showers. Snow may be heavy at times this afternoon with total accumulations around an inch. Highs today, low to mid-20s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from People's United Bank, serving individuals and businesses throughout the Northeast for over 170 years in branches and online, peoples.com. It is 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, part one of a two-part mini-series on the teaching profession. Today, we're looking at teacher assessments, how to evaluate teacher quality, looking at the role of test scores and other evaluation tools that we could use for our teachers here in the Granite State. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. Post a comment there. Very quickly to you too, Leanna Heighton. We've been talking about how New Hampshire is trying to approach this idea of you've assessed. Each time someone is coming up short, what do you do about that? What have other states done, Leanna, when it comes to getting rid of teachers who aren't making the grade, so to speak?
Yeah, it's interesting. Ashley was talking about linking teacher evaluations to professional development and support. And I'd say one of the greatest fears of the unions nationally is that these are teacher evaluations are just going to be used to dismiss so-called ineffective teachers. But if these evaluations aren't done completely fairly, we might end up dismissing people who might have been good teachers with a little bit of work. So a lot of places are doing sort of this, you know, a probationary period. If you get a low evaluation score, maybe you're given a year or two to improve. And, you know, hopefully the district is offering you opportunities to become a better teacher. They're giving you professional development. Sometimes that link isn't there, though. And if it's just, you know, a teacher's getting an evaluation says you're not doing well, and then they're not given any resources for becoming better, that is definitely a problem.
All right, let's take some more calls. And Ray's joining us from Whitefield. Hi, Ray. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes. How are you doing today? I think as a former teacher, I think it is important that the evaluation process at the beginning know the ability and the achievement level of the students themselves. In other words, from going to point A to point B, some of the classes, and in fact, when I was a teacher, I know that you could put a monkey in front of some of these classes, and the kids are going to learn because of their abilities and their achievement level. And I had classes where I could have been Socrates, and the kids are going to have difficulty learning. So it's very important that the evaluation process know where the children or the students stand at the beginning of the process, so that if you're going to use test results to evaluate a teacher, this has to be taken into consideration.
You know, Ray, it's a great point. And this gets to do something you said earlier, Ben, this whole follow the child model that we have here in New Hampshire is what Ray is talking about. That, to me, seems like it was New Hampshire's response to that fill-in-the-bubble mentality of no child left behind. Lionel Tracy, I think, former chair of the Department of Education, tried to bring that in. Follow the child.
Absolutely. And I think, again, as we talk about, we need to get away. I think one of the big, big, big issues, I can't say big enough on this one, was that No Child Left Behind made it sound as if everybody was the same. And that's always been my problem with it. No matter what area of life you look at, everybody is not the same. And that's reality. And what I like about Follow the Learner is exactly what Ray has mentioned. You take a student who comes in on day one and you know where he or she is or finished the previous year. I think it's really important that we know where they are on day one, because especially in a place like Manchester, you see a lot of drop-off over the summer. That's the big problem with summer. We love it, but the big problem with summer is you leave third grade on a third grade reading level, but you come into fourth grade on a second grade reading level.
Really?
I'm throwing numbers at you because I work in high school, so I don't do the running records, which is how we evaluate. But my point simply is that when we don't have the consistent approach at home to help maintain the growth we've made as students, then we do see a slide back. And so we need to know where we start with each year so that we know where we end each year. And that applies to each individual student, not the group as a whole.
Let's take another one. Thank you for that one, Ray. And Corrine's calling in from Manchester. Hi, Corrine. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm talking specifically from a parent perspective. My daughter graduated from one of the high schools in Manchester in 2009, and she did pretty well. But she was a tenacious girl, and she knew what she wanted. My son is graduating this year from one of the high schools as well, the same high school, and he's not as driven as she was. I find that there's more of an issue with making sure that they're in school as opposed and they get penalized if they're tardy or they're absent too many times, as opposed to connecting with the child. I know I've followed my children from the time they're in kindergarten here all the way up until they're graduating, and I've tried to get as involved as possible without getting in the way of the parent, of the teachers. But I find that the one thing that I was looking at as my kids were going through the grade levels was how the teacher interacted with my child, what their thoughts were based on their performance, not on their grades as much. Because my daughter was great with test scores. My son polar opposite.
So how do you fold this into our conversation here, Corrine, about teacher evaluations? What does your experience say to you about how we should evaluate our teachers' effectiveness?
Well, I know that there's probably many schools of thought on that.
Sure.
And there's many, many areas that could use improvement around the board. But and every child is different, just like every teacher is different.
I see. And this,
the one thing that teachers need to have, that I can say in a nutshell, is they've got to have that connection with the child first and foremost. And because that's their job.
You know, Corrine, this is a great point. Now, I'll ask you, I think, Stephen, we were talking the other day just among ourselves on the exchange, the staff, about those teachers that really meant a lot to us, really had an impact on our lives. And it was those teachers that engaged with us no matter where we were, that had that energy and passion that made us care about something that maybe we didn't even think we cared about. I mean, to this day, I like earth science because I had a really cool 10th grade earth science teacher. How do you get that, though, into your assessment? I mean, that's more the art of teaching. That's not really the data and the science. But how do you incorporate that into an assessment, that sort of spark and passion?
And it's those intangibles that are really hard to measure that are really the key to success. And sort of digress just a little bit, sort of teacher evaluation model, what we're trying to get at is sort of a more holistic approach. A lot of the models that have been presented in states and other places are coming from a business world where they are product-based. And the results are pretty black and white, how many products you can sell. As Ben alluded to, we're talking about kids, and each kid is different and should be different, and we need to value that. And that's sort of the craft, the art of teaching. If you can sort of make those connections with the kid in your classroom, in the art room, and all those other aspects of a student's education. One of the ways that you can try to get that is sort of try to solicit input from the students themselves, solicit input from parents is a one of the measures that you try to tap into those sort of intangibles rather than a raw score or a test.
So input from parents as part of teacher evaluations, you think that that would be also a good tool?
I think when it's used properly, that is one sort of aspect that can be considered to look at how the child is sort of performing from a parental standpoint, as our last quarter alluded to. But it has to be used within the framework of an evaluation plan and done accordingly to what the process is trying to evoke as a response.
Yeah, that's interesting. What do you think, Ashley? Because within each district and within each school, you know, parents do talk and they do say among themselves, oh, I really hope my child gets Mrs. So-and-so, or I really hope my child doesn't get, you know, Mr. So-and-so. I mean, everybody knows who the teachers are that all the parents want their kids to go to. So that's that. These are the teachers that have the spark, that have the excitement, that the kids are going to learn because making education fun. How do you bring that into, though, an assessment? I mean, that doesn't show up in a data point.
Yeah, well, actually, that's a point that's come up many times, and I think a lot of school districts are looking at that, considering sort of survey data as a part of a teacher's evaluation. And I think that can have a lot of validity. I think it has to be done, just like Stephen said, pretty carefully. I think that you would have a lot more value when you look at it longitudinally. I think otherwise, you could definitely have some skews, given certain populations or different sizes. So the more data you have, the better. I think of that more as a college model, which has clearly worked in universities. I think they always have student surveys at the end. How did you feel about
sure.
the class? How did you, you know, I think that can have a lot of value. I think it can also have a lot of immediate value for a teacher right then and there. You know, oh, wow, Billy seems to not be getting this today. He said he is sad. You know, let me now modify my practice a little bit. So I think it can have some immediate impact, and I think it can also have some longitudinal impact, meaning like over time, the more data you have, the broader your look at it, the more it can sort of impact your practice.
Does the State Department of Education recommend that districts use parent and student evaluations as part of their overall assessments?
It's in the task force as a reference, again, as a choice point, as something to think about. I think when people think of student outcomes, they only think of test data or they think of some kind of measurable, you know, writing sample score. But I think that's something that a district might want to consider. as a student outcome.
Okay, Corrine, great question. Thank you. And here's one that I wanted to throw at you, Leanna. You know, we've seen several editorials by teachers over the past couple years who say, look, I've had it. I'm leaving the profession. I'm discouraged. They're even discouraging others from becoming teachers. They say there's too much scrutiny, too much political heat. In some states, as you said, Leanna, these evaluation systems have really been controversial. What does that say to you, Leanna, about this whole sort of hyper-focus on evaluations and assessments? Is it going to get too tough so where good people say, forget it?
Yeah, it's interesting. This really is a hard time to be a teacher. I think we've heard a lot of sort of people talking about teacher bashing over the last couple of years, and we have seen a lot of editorials, and a lot of teachers are saying, yeah, I've had it. It's a tough time to be a teacher. And we've been talking about, tying teacher evaluations to student test scores, and now we've got a collision of policies here where Common Core is going into place. We don't know what the Common Core tests are really going to look like. We'll see a little bit this spring, but next spring they're going into place. And in a lot of states, teachers are going to be evaluated based on student test scores on these very new tests that the teachers haven't seen and the students haven't seen. So it is a scary time to be a teacher right now.
Would you recommend, Ben, one of your high school seniors says, hey, Ben, hey, Mr. Dick, I want to go to school to become a teacher. Would you recommend that he or she become a teacher?
You want my honest answer?
Yes.
I honestly vary it based on the field. If they're big English, I'm an English teacher. If they're big English people, I say, well, then teaching is probably for you because there's not a whole heck of a lot you're going to do with an English degree. If they are math people, I say you're probably going to do far better in the private sector because there's more opportunity where you can make better money and you can make a better career.
Better isn't just about money, though.
No. When I say better, I'm factoring in everything you said, which includes and what Leanna said. It is a tough time. People have it out for public education right now. And I might just be speaking because I wear another hat as a union president, but it is a very tough time to go into the field. And so if somebody has the passion for it, if somebody wakes up and says, this is what I want to do with my life, I would never discourage that. I would never discourage that. My wife was one of those people. She woke up in the third grade and said, teaching is for me.
Really? Wow.
And she's probably one of the best teachers around. But if somebody's thinking about it and they're saying, geez, I don't know if this is what I want to do, I would be remiss in my duties as an educator if I didn't tell them that there are many opportunities out there for them.
Stephen, I'd love your thoughts on this. Ashley, you too. Do we go overboard with this evaluation system to the point where good teachers don't want to get in the field or they leave?
I think it has the potential of doing that. And I think we're seeing the repercussions in the public sector of education of really emphasizing the product and not the process. And it's important to remember that we're dealing with our children, and children are complex, wonderful sort of creatures that take years and years to sort of develop at different times. And I think we need to remember that each child is special in their own way and have educators who can recognize that and educators who promote what's best for each child in their classroom and in their schools and in their community.
What do you think, Ashley?
I have almost a little different perspective, though I don't necessarily disagree with what my colleagues are saying here. But I think having a pretty clear evaluation system can actually elevate the profession. And I think making it
feels more fair.
I think it seems more fair. I think it also tells teachers exactly what is good teaching. If you define good teaching, well, now you can actually achieve it. And I think that, we talked a little bit before the show about some horror stories. You know, you get an evaluation just tucked in your mailbox at the end of the year, though no one's ever seen you. Well, after a while, I think that can kind of erode the value that you feel about your own job. Well, someone's evaluating me and they haven't even seen me. You know, but if you have a comprehensive evaluation and support model, I think you're only going to get better in the profession and you're going to feel supported. And I think the public is going to see that.
I have to ask you about Common Core, Leanna, even though we don't have much time left, and you've mentioned it a couple times. So Common Core is coming next year, and as you've said, it's going to be getting away from the fill-in-the-bubble mentality that some say No Child Left Behind was all about. What is going to be the biggest change when it comes to Common Core in terms of teacher evaluations, Leanna, this subject that we're talking about today?
It's an interesting question. I think right now, I mean, everything we're writing is about Common Core. That's why I can't help but bring it up, because it really is. It's going to be a huge shift in what everything looks like. But in terms of evaluations, because so many states, as I said before, are tying student test scores to teacher evaluations, and these tests are changing. We're going to see what happens. The unions are really are calling for a moratorium on that for at least a year on tying those student test scores to teacher evaluations, because we're just getting into the Common Core. You know, schools are implementing it, but the tests aren't in place. We don't know exactly what they're going to look like. So the unions are saying, hey, let's take a break here and not tie those things together. Let's let teachers and students figure this out first, and then eventually, you know, we'll get there. We'll see if that happens. There, so far, it's not really happening. There's a little bit of movement in California, but we will see what happens over the next few months and year.
Well, plenty for you to keep writing on at Education Week, right, Leanna?
Yes, of course.
Thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
That's Leanna Hyten, assistant editor for Education Week, co-author of the blog Curriculum Matters. And Ashley Frame, thank you also for being with us. Really appreciate it.
Well, it was my pleasure.
Ashley Frame, classroom teacher herself for 9 years. She now works at the New Hampshire Department of Education. Stephen Dano, thank you for taking time out. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Stephen Dano, fourth grade teacher at the Lyme School. He's been an elementary teacher for nearly 30 years. And Ben Dick, it was good to meet you, too. Thank
Likewise,
you.
Likewise, thank you.
Ben Dick, English teacher at Memorial High School and president of the Manchester Education Association. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. The rollout of medical marijuana heats up as the Attorney General warns against issuing ID cards before dispensaries are ready. Wood pellet manufacturers fall short of demand as temperatures plunge this winter. And former New Hampshire U.S. Senator Bob Smith prepares to kick off his campaign to regain his old seat. Send us your thoughts by email, Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio with the Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock. New Hampshire weather mostly cloudy today with scattered snow showers. Snow may be heavy at times this afternoon with total accumulations around an inch. Highs today, low to mid-20s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Plymouth State University, offering graduate courses in Plymouth and Concord. To meet the needs of working professionals throughout the state, plymouth.edu/graduate.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1.
WEVS Nashua 88.3.
WEVH Hanover 91.3.
WEVN Keene 90.7.
WEVC Gorham 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org. It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Elise Labatt of CNN sitting in for Diane Rehm. A powerful new prescription painkiller is about to hit the market. Its manufacturer and the FDA say Zahydra, a pure form of hydrocodone, will benefit patients with pain requiring daily, around-the-clock, long-term treatment that can't be remedied with other drugs. Critics respond